Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long tongue lie.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. Talk about two races here in Wisconsin, very different issues involved. I'm going to talk about the superficial issues, and then I'm going to talk about the real McCoy. Star of the Supreme Court race, Janet Protasiewicz, right now appears to be ahead. There are four candidates. The latest filing from her, the financial filing required by Wisconsin law, she's raised about $2 million. That's about a million more than they'd anticipated or budgeted for the primary. She's raised 600,000 more than the rest of the field combined. Now, that's her raising. One of the problems in this race is that the E-Lines, this U-Line character, owns the U-Line company in Illinois, who put $30 million into Ron Johnson's campaign and put on slime ads to beat Mandela Barnes. He's already put in six figures, and he's going to put in anything dwarfing what Janet Protasiewicz can raise, or anybody can raise, because then there'll be outside contributions on her side too. But in any event, in the general. But here's the deal. Here are some of the superficial issues. Dan Kelly is in trouble. Dan Kelly, I think, is not a good candidate. He lost re-election. He was appointed to the Supreme Court by Scott Walker, and he did a bad job. Then he did a bad job in his campaign, and he lost when they had the first election where they could test him. He's running again, and he is viciously attacking this Jennifer Doro. And he's attacking her on some what I think are superficial things, but I want to talk to you about the real issue. There's the issue originally of the fact that her son is being investigated by the police for selling drugs to a UWM student that were laced with fentanyl and killed the student. And the son's not talking. Jennifer Doro is not cooperating. And that was the issue for the time being. Well, now there's another issue. About 2 weeks ago, the Court of Appeals in Wisconsin, a 3-0 decision, so it was unanimous, overturned a sentence she had given to a woman who was convicted of drunk driving. Fifth offense. She blew a 2.99. Now, I'll tell you something. You blow a 2.99, the standard is 0.08. Anything over 1.0 gets serious. Anything over 2.0, you can barely see. At 2.99 is like a 3.0. I mean, I'm surprised she has a liver left. In any event, this was her fifth offense. Apparently, people had said that she'd stolen some booze from a store, but her conviction was for drunk driving. I don't know whether she stole the booze or not, but she certainly drank a hell of a lot of booze. Wisconsin law provides, she could have been given a fairly substantial prison term. Wisconsin law provides that she should have been given at least a minimum of a year and a half in jail. Fifth offense is a serious thing. First offense is bad. For a long time, we were the only state in the country that didn't make that a criminal offense. Second offense is bad. Third is really bad. Fourth, fifth, at some point, you're going to kill somebody. When you blow 2.99, you're going to run over a child, hit a bike, crash into a car at an intersection, and kill a family. And she should have censored this woman to at least a year and a half, maybe a year. Well, she gave her probation. She gave her probation. The Court of Appeals said, no way, Jose, and they reversed and it has to be resentenced. And this Dan Kelly is hitting her on that. Mark Belling, who's supporting Jennifer Doro, is hitting Kelly for raising the issue. And it's a mess. That's the Republican so-called conservative side. But the real issue, why it's essential to elect Janet Protasiewicz is not whether Jennifer Doro is a particularly good trial judge. especially when there are no cameras in the courtroom. And she's been questioned about her sentencing history and excessively lenient and so on. That's not the issue. The issue is that Jennifer Doro is an election denier, just like Dan Kelly. Jennifer Doro is supported by Pat Rogensack. She's the Supreme Court justice who is not running for re-election, and this is why there's an open seat. And she was one of the three who voted not to certify Joe Biden, even though he won the election. Another one, two of the others, are supporting Dan Kelly. Two of the others that said that they didn't, weren't going to certify Joe Biden either. These are not conservatives. It is not a conservative thing to say that when somebody, in this case Joe Biden, won an election fair and square in Wisconsin, we're simply going to overrule the will of the voters and install Donald Trump. That's not conservative. That's commie. That's commie. That's what happens in Russia, Belarus. That would happen in most of Asia, most of Africa. That's a commie deal. That's what would happen in Turkey. And we're not going to put up with that. The other thing is the 1849 statute, really kind of severe statute banning abortion. 1849 is 174 years ago. Women couldn't vote in 1849. Science in 1849 was primitive compared to now. But these so-called conservatives say that that statute's still a good statute. I mean, there are statutes in Mary Lowell, England that go back to the 1300s. Nobody enforces them. People didn't know anything in the 1300s, or the 1400s, or the 1500s, or the 1600s, or the 1700s, and not in the 1800s when it comes to any kind of science. But this case is about, this law, it's not a lawsuit, this election is about, is this swing vote, because right now it's three. They call them Democrats. They're actually independent justices who simply do the right thing. People like Anne Walsh Bradley, people like Rebecca Dallet, and so forth. These people are three in number on a court of seven. And right now, there are three in number on a court of seven the other way. This is the swing vote, and it's a 10-year seat. 10-year seat. If you care about gerrymandering and you don't like it, as I do not like it, you will vote for Janet Protasiewicz. If you like gerrymandering, you'll vote for one of the two people calling themselves conservatives. We're not conservatives. They're for commie government. If you think that an 1849 statute that controls women, but women couldn't vote for it, it's 174 years old. There's been a lot of medical advances in 174 years, duh. Then if you don't like that statute, you'll vote for Janet Protasiewicz. If you like that statute, you'll vote for one of the others. If you think that somebody who wins an election in Wisconsin, and you know we have fair elections, you know we have fair elections, and you want to certify the winner, regardless of party, vote for Janet Protasiewicz. She'll certify a Republican, a Democrat, whoever wins. If, on the other hand, you think that only Republican candidates should be certified, then you'll vote for the other two. It's as simple as that. It is really as simple as that. The second local election I wanted to talk about, and remember, the primary is a week from today, 7 days away. You can vote early. You can vote early in person. Just go down to whatever the polling place is in your municipality, and you can vote early in person. Bring your ID and you vote early in person. The second one is completely different, but almost equally important, not quite as important, is for the state Senate district, District 8, which are the northern suburbs of Milwaukee County and portions of Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington County. The only Democrat on the ballot this coming Tuesday is Jody Habersinikin. She's terrific, environmental lawyer, Mom has four kids. She's honest. She'd be terrific. And she's running some very good ads. On the Republican side, there are several candidates. One of them is Janelle Branchon from Menominee Falls, an election denier. Stands for gerrymandering. Said that the election should have been overturned and the legislature should have given Trump the electors. She made a political mistake. She supported Robin Voss's opponent in his primary, and the guy almost won. Totally unqualified guy, Adam Steen, I think his name was. Not that Voss is qualified, he's gerrymandered, but so Voss got angry and threw her out of the Republican caucus and called her inept, unqualified. And she spends her time tearing down the Republican Party. Well, let me tell you something. She is inept, she is unqualified, so is Voss, he's gerrymandered too. He isn't throwing her out of the caucus because he opposes the fact that she was for Trump. Or the fact that she didn't want Joe Biden to be certified. He's throwing her out because she made a political mistake and supported his opponent in the primary. The other main candidate is Dan Knodel, K-N-O-D-L, or Knodel. He is Voss's guy. He's a colorless. He's a good boy. He's a good boy on the Republican side. Goes along to get along. He also contacted Pence and said, as a vice president, Pence should not certify Joe Biden on January 6th, the day of the insurrection, even though Pence had absolutely no authority to, quote, not certify anybody. That was a ministerial position. And this Knodel, in my opinion, may lose because people are tired of the business as usual Republican Party, even in the Republican Party. There's a third guy named Van Mobley, and nobody ever heard of him before. Nobody's ever going to hear from him again. And there was a kid, a student, and his name doesn't even crop up. But it's basically Branchon and Knodel, and I think Branchon may do it. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. And I'll explain why right after the break.
For a long time, sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back. It's Matt Flynn, Director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to get back to the 8th District, a Senate district for the Milwaukee County suburbs, a little bit of Waukesha, Washington County, Ozaukee County. This race is very important because if Jody Habush-Sinikin wins it, the Democrat, it will deny the Republicans a veto-proof majority in the Senate. They're only two or three seats away from a veto-proof majority in the House, in the Assembly, believe it or not. We are the most gerrymandered state in the country. There are 33 Senate districts. When Alberta Darling was in this seat, they had 22 of them. We had 11 of them, even though we get half the vote. That's corrupt. That's gerrymander. It's commie government. But we got to do something about it, and this is one way to do it. Jody Habush-Sinikin gets in, and they don't have a veto-proof majority anymore. Obviously, in the Assembly, you have to make sure that they don't chip away any more seats. Now, two things. The two major candidates, Janelle Branchon and this Dan Knodel has one accomplishment. He is pressing to make February 6th, quote, Ronald Reagan Day, end quote, in Wisconsin. This is pathetic. Guy's pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. So, but he's the institutional character that's being supported by Voss and people of that ilk. I'm thinking that Voss right now is really losing popularity among the Republican rank and file. They're really tired of these guys. When you have a guy like this Adam Steen in his 20s who had absolutely no credentials at all, and almost knocks Voss off. That tells you something. And there's something else that's happening here that I think is terrific. Jody Habersinikin is doing a tactic that, well, I call the Claire McCaskill tactic. She was a U.S. senator from Missouri, had a very tough re-election fight a couple of years ago. And she had several opponents. One of them probably could have beaten her. But there was another one on the other side that was a flat-out nut, And he made statements about women, about sexual assault, saying that a woman couldn't get pregnant if the sexual assault was really uninvited, and really ticked a lot of people off. So Claire McCaskill put on a lot of ads that just mentioned his name, said he's so conservative, I'm so afraid if he gets the nomination. Well, Republicans fell for the bait, nominated him, and Claire McCaskill won, the Democrat. Well, Jody Habersinikin is doing that in a much more, a much smoother way. In her ads, she just starts with this Janelle Branchon, who is flat out bonkers, says she's so conservative, she got Legislator of the Year award by a pro-life group. She wants to defund Planned Parenthood. Well, this is catnip to a lot of the people out there in Waukesha County and Ozaukee and Milwaukee and in Washington County. I think, and the other people haven't been putting on ads. I have a feeling that they will fall for the trap and they will vote for Janelle Branchon. Then, second part of the ad, Jody Habersinikin has some very, very good stuff about her. An environmental lawyer, she'd be terrific in the state Senate. So stand by. Very, very important race. The most important is getting Janet Protasiewicz, Judge Janet Protasiewicz, in the Supreme Court primary on February 21, a week from now. She has more prosecutor experience than the other three candidates combined. Two-term judge so far, sterling reputation. And there isn't even a close comparison between her and any of the others in experience. So there's a second one, though, if you're in the 8th Senate District, Jody Habersinikin, but I think you may find that this Knoedl will go down in flames. Go to the lines. Bill of South Milwaukee, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Bill?
Hi. I just wanted to add a little more about one of the Republican Senate candidates. You know, just in case, you know, we know people know what a nutcase Janelle Branchon is. People know that Knoedl is Robin Voss's rubber stamp. I just thought I'd mention Van Mobley actually has been heard of. He was the original Trump supporter in this state in 2016 when the entire Republican establishment, including talk radio, was opposing Trump. Van Mobley was about, I remember at the time it was written, he was about the only elected official in the state. He's the Thiensville Village president. He's the only elected official in the state to support Trump at that point. So in case anybody might think that he's going to be any better than the other two, think again.
Outstanding, Bill. Thank you for calling in. I did not know that. We'll go quick now to Sauk City Bob, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Sauk City Bob?
Yeah, hi, Matt. Say, I was out for a walk yesterday listening to your program, and I just thought you being a lawyer, you'd want to make sure that, you know, you're using the correct language when you're describing a certain situation. And when you were talking about the Supreme Court, they didn't actually certify or endorse Joe Biden. What they did was is they prevented the election from being overturned.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. But remember, radio is a hot medium and you have to put it in the vernacular. But Sauk City Bob is correct. What Sauk City Bob is saying is when the Republicans tried to get it overturned, three of the judges would have voted to overturn it. In other words, take it away from Biden. Four of them voted to sustain the results. And frankly, the hero there is Brian Hagedorn. He was a Republican, but I'll tell you what, I think that he did quite a heck of a job. But that's right. It's not a matter of certifying or not, but it's the same thing, because Republicans go, okay, don't certify Joe Biden. Okay. So three of them, the Republicans go, okay, we won't certify Joe Biden. If it hadn't been for the other four, including one Republican who I think is character, even though he's a Republican, but he didn't matter to him. He read the Constitution. We avoided a constitutional crisis. Bob, thanks a lot. Call in a lot in the future. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to raise a very serious issue about Ron DeSantis, not the usual stuff. And keep in mind that a lot of people are going, well, we don't want Trump. Obviously, we don't want Trump. And DeSantis is the only alternative, and he's bad, but he's not as bad as Trump. Well, I think he is, and let me tell you the following. First of all, with regard to Trump, you may not know it, but a number of senators and congressmen and governors have already endorsed Trump for re-election. The Senate, Senator Mullins of Oklahoma, Eric Schmidt of Missouri, Tommy Tuberville of Alabama, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, they've all endorsed Trump. 17 House members have endorsed Trump for re-election. And McMaster, the governor of South Carolina, has endorsed him. So don't lightly brush him away. As bad as he is, he's a Putin asset, betrayed us to Putin. Be very, very wary of him. So a lot of people go, well, don't have to worry about him because Ron DeSantis will beat him and blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm not going to try to prognosticate what that election will do. But let me tell you something DeSantis did the other day, and I want to explain the background of this. DeSantis called on the justices to revisit the case of New York Times versus Sullivan back in the early 60s. And he's also said that he would appoint justices if he's president who would overturn that case. Gorsuch on the Supreme Court and Clarence Thomas agree with him. All it would take with two more, and they would overturn New York Times versus Sullivan. Now, why is that important? It's important because we would lose representative democracy. We'd lose our democracy if that could overturn, and here's why. New York Times versus Sullivan was a libel case. And in it, a guy named Sullivan, who was a sheriff down in Alabama, sued the New York Times and said that in some ad or article they had run, it impugned his character. That somehow, you know, there was some murders around there, some crimes that occurred, and Sullivan was somehow kind of didn't police it correctly or whatever. Now, Sullivan wasn't even named in the ad, but it was inferential. He said, well, because they talked about sheriffs and blah, blah, blah. It went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and in those days, and even now, you have a case like that in one of those southern courts, they will come back with a big verdict again in favor of the local guys. And it costs a lot to hire lawyers, but the New York Times had the money. They went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. In the case of New York Times versus Sullivan, for the first time, to protect the First Amendment, here's what the Supreme Court said. It said, when you have a public figure, and that's an elected official, for instance, like this guy or a movie star, or anybody who's a public figure, in other words, has name recognition, it's not enough to allege and show that what was said was untrue about you. You have to also show that it was done with malice. Now, malice is a term of art. That's not what you think it is. It doesn't mean, you know, some, you know, anger or something of that nature. It means deliberately stated, even though you knew it was false, or you were so reckless because one phone call could have told you it was false. But unless that's the case, a public figure can't sue. That is essential for our First Amendment. You pick up the National Enquirer all the time or see it in the grocery store. The stuff they have on the front page about any celebrity is libelous. But frequently, it's just a little wisp of a rumor, that kind of thing. And nobody pays much attention to it. if you did not have New York Times versus Sullivan in this climate, Republicans would sue, especially small papers. You know who did this? Was Trump. He sued a TV station up in Rhinelander for putting, for airing a commercial that somebody else had placed that had all of his comments in his own voice, if you recall, saying that he knew that the pandemic was very serious and he knew that it could kill people. And then he went ahead and shot his mouth off and said it wouldn't and couldn't in public. He didn't sue the Milwaukee media because they have the money to defend themselves. He didn't sue the national media and he didn't sue the Madison media. He sued Rhinelander. Now, these stations have very low margins. They're very, very spare margins. They took it off the air. You had the wrestler Hulk Hogan. There was a case where some media outlet had broadcast a video of him having sex with some woman, I think the wife of a friend, believe it or not. And Peter Thiel, T-H-I-E-L, he's the billionaire, was mad at that publication because they had broken the story that he was gay. And he didn't like that. So he funded a libel lawsuit of Hulk Hogan against this media organization, and Hogan won and bankrupted them. They went out of business. There are people now who buy shares in litigation, venture capitalists, hedge funds, because attorneys' fees are very expensive. So they will pay the lawyers themselves, but then they get half the victory if there's a victory. If New York Times versus Sullivan is repealed, and the only standard is whether a jury thinks it's true or not, you will not have a free media. And if you don't have a free media, you will not have a First Amendment. In other countries around the world, journalists are murdered. One of the most dangerous places in Mexico. They have a crooked narco government. A lot of them are on the take from drug cartels, their parliament. They had a prior president who, there was testimony at El Chapo's trial that he'd been paid $100 million by the cartels. We right now have a fellow named Luna who is under indictment and he's being tried for taking money from the cartels. We had a prior highly placed defense official. When we arrested him, the Mexican government, some of them down there threatened to expose our agents, our drug agents, which means they'd be killed. If we didn't return him for trial in Mexico, we did. They dismissed the charges, shook his hand, and he's back in business. It's a crooked government. It's a crooked narco government. Now, their journalists are killed. Many of them are killed. They're killed in a lot of places in Asia and in Africa. So far, they haven't been killed in this country, although Donald Trump has threatened them at his rallies. He'll point out to them and say, there's the fake media. Some of them need escorts to get back to their cars. The Republican Party, as you know, has injected the threat of violence into our society, into our discourse. But this is deeper and more serious in this respect. You have DeSantis saying he wants New York Times versus Sullivan repealed. You have Gorsuch and Clarence Thomas. It only takes two more. DeSantis is president. He said he's going to appoint justices who would repeal it. His communications aide is a woman named Christina Puschau. She calls the media, this is his communications aide, quote, partisan legacy media and, quote, Democratic activists posing as a Capitol Press Corps, end quote. In the New York Times versus Sullivan, there has been a lot of case law interpreting it. And some of the case law in the cases have extended the doctrine of public figure, which makes you very difficult to sue you, to what's called a limited purpose public figure. In other words, you may not be an elected official, you may not be a celebrity, but if you're swept up in a public controversy and you get a lot of publicity, the same protections apply for the media if they report on it. This is essential. And the core reason for this is because public figures, whether it's politicians, whether it's celebrities, whether it's limited purpose public figures, usually have the wherewithal to defend themselves if they have to. And more importantly, when people see things said about public figures, about a movie star, about a congressman, a senator, they sort of take it with a grain of salt. That will change with somebody like Ron DeSantis in there. That will change. I cannot tell you how dangerous this is, and I cannot tell you enough how important this is. If he gets in, you already have Gorsuch and Thomas. He's going to appoint justices who would overturn it. And we will not have a free media. They can't afford it. You will have billionaires. You will have venture capitalists who are trying to invest in plaintiffs' cases. And every time a newspaper or a magazine or a TV station says or reports something that's even very true, but there are any rough edges around it, not quite 100% true, the doctrine in libel cases is all it has to be is substantially true, but that is up to the jury what that means. And juries in Alabama and a lot of these places can say whatever they want. I've tried libel cases. I represented a very, very good media company in their TV and radio properties here in Wisconsin. And I'll never forget one case I had. It involved whether a letter was libelous. And I was defending the organization that had published it. And we had a tough case because, quite frankly, we had a lot of problems with that letter. But I made my argument to the jury, and they came back a few hours later and said it wasn't libelous, and we won. The judge let us talk to the jury, sort of debrief them. That can be done only if the judge permits it. And I said, how did you come to that decision? And they said, this is what they said. They said, we didn't know what substantially true means. So we put the letter on a blackboard and we counted the words. And it was 134 words, the letter was. And they said slightly more than half of them were true and the rest were not true. Now we'd won the case, but I said, which ones were true and which ones weren't true? And they basically said, well, the nouns and the verbs were untrue, but the pronouns in the articles were true. That's the kind of stuff juries do. And I was my client was a beneficiary of that. But the point is, the standard is substantial truth, but if you're dealing with a public figure, they have to prove malice. They have to prove that you published it on purpose, knowing it was false, or one phone call practically would tell you it was false. And that has sustained our First Amendment. Gorsuch and Thomas, who are notorious for other things, both in the abortion context and a lot of other things, are on the other side of that. DeSantis has now said he's on the other side of it. Trump has said he's on the other side of it. If either one of these characters gets in, we're not talking people like Liz Cheney here, or Adam Kinzinger, or even Mitt Romney, people who are what I would call conventional Republicans with integrity. We are talking about radicals who would install commie government on this country. I've said before, and I will say right now, fascism creeps in on little cat's feet. When Hitler took over in the elections of 1932 and 1933, he got himself appointed the chancellor. He asked the Reichstag, which is the equivalent of their Congress, to suspend itself for a few years and he'd take care of problems. And then he had some of them killed and they never got reinstated. And he started the Holocaust in World War II. He didn't do it with machine guns. He just gave speeches, said, you don't have to worry about me. You don't have to worry about me. Just let me have power for a while. That's what happened. And this is what's happening right now. And we have got to understand that. We will not have a First Amendment if DeSantis or Trump get in. We will not have a First Amendment. Biden's running again. I think he can beat either one of them. We got to get behind him. On a break, the lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Go to the lines. Tom McFarland, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Tom?
Hi, Matt. You know, just for those callers or listeners who think that you're being hyperbolic in regards to DeSantis, one of the books that has made the ban list and is now a felony in Florida, if you have that on the shelf of a library, is the story of Hank Aaron. And the reason why this book made the ban list is because the story speaks to the prejudice that he experienced within his career. And it's thought that it portrays whites in a very negative fashion. So because of the fact that they're talking about Hank Aaron and his experience, no, DeSantis decides that that's an illegal book. We can't have that on our shelves. And that's just one of many books that DeSantis has on there. And they all seem to be a common thread that we want to have our version of history, and anything that is counter to that is now going to be illegal.
That is an excellent point. I want to give a little background on what Tom McFarland just said. DeSantis is truly bad news. Do not think that he's a benign Trump. He's not a benign Trump. He's a wannabe. And two things. I met Hank Aaron. He came into town to campaign for Dick Artisan for mayor in the mid-90s. I was supporting Dick, and Hank Aaron autographed a bunch of baseballs. I still have several of them. I thought he had more dignity, quiet dignity, than any man I've ever met. And in his early years, many of you don't know this, he started playing baseball, minor league, in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And you know what was sad was? They did a biography of him. Even Eau Claire. Now, Eau Claire is a terrific town, and it's a lot better than anywhere in the South. But when he was done with practice, he just went back to his room. He didn't feel that he could walk around town, had a little food in his room, and sat there by himself. Those guys had a lot of guts. They had a lot of guts. And the thing about DeSantis is he not only did that you just described, but now he has set up a task force to prosecute voters in the minority areas. He set up this election integrity police force. And now they have put a statute on his desk, which he's about to sign, because they have a gerrymandered Republican majority, that makes it easier to prosecute voters around the state. Now, most of these people were arrested by DeSantis. They've been felons. Well, the Floridians voted in a referendum to let people who had finished their sentences vote. The Florida Supreme Court, a gerrymandered Republican court, said, well, we're going to say, though, that they have to pay off their fines, their forfeitures, and the court costs. Well, none of these people could even find work, much less pay $10,000, $30,000. And some of them were sent ballots in the mail maybe 2 weeks before their theoretical probation time period expired, and they go and vote. DeSantis would send a SWAT team to get them, and they would have camouflage, and they'd have semi-automatics, and scream and shout and scare the hell out of the neighborhood. And there are 20 of them who were arrested, all ex-prisoners. And every one of them was not convicted. The judges wouldn't put up with this. But let me tell you what happened. If a task force showed up in my neighborhood with semi-automatics and camouflage, screaming, pushing, I wouldn't like it. I'd do something about it, but I'd vote. But you do that in a minority area, where if a police officer kill someone, if a police officer thinks someone's hands are not in view, that kind of thing. This has happened. They get the message. I guess the governor doesn't want us to vote. And many will vote, but not all of them will vote. Not all of them will vote. These guys show up in combat uniforms, rifles, shouting, pushing. They terrorize the vote. And Abbott did this in Texas, too. And he passed laws, too, that said if you interfere with the line of sight of one of the thugs who's permitted to be an election monitor, quote unquote, that you have committed a crime. And they don't enforce that in most jurisdictions. Some lady sitting there all day gets up to use the bathroom, and some thug that you know, why they let these people in right next to the voters to glare at them in minority districts is wrong. That's why the U.S. Supreme Court got rid of the Voting Rights Act, virtually all of it. There's only a little bit left. Nobody said they had the jurisdiction to overrule a statute of Congress that's been in effect since the 60s. Nobody. They just did it. There are no checks and balances on the Supreme Court. There are on the president and there are on the Congress. That's got to change. Merrick Garland should be bringing actions against these kinds of criminal laws, and he hasn't been doing it, and he should do it. So DeSantis, if he gets in, you're going to have a national election police force, SWAT teams going out, frankly, because he did it in Florida. Why wouldn't he do it nationally? And number two, you are going to see him putting on Supreme Court justices who will, in effect, get rid of the First Amendment protections of our free press. Going to the lines, we have a little time left, and I can get you all in if you take a minute and a half, maybe a minute. Wisco Paul, my friend, thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Hey, I'll just make this quick. DeSantis is actually worse than Trump, if that's possible, but that's just the way it is, Matt. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Paul. And you're right, except that right now, Trump has also betrayed us to Putin. I don't know if DeSantis would do that. I don't want either one of them. Jacob, Eureka, California, you're our last caller, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's in your mind?
Hey, Matt. Well, you know, DeSantis has to distract the public from the latest controversy that Donald Trump is bringing up about DeSantis. And, of course, that is about DeSantis grooming young high school girls when DeSantis was a teacher in the state of Georgia. And, of course, we've seen the photos of these young underage girls hanging all over DeSantis while they're drunk. So, you know, we got some questions about what DeSantis was up to when he was a teacher. And it's Donald Trump who's presented the evidence. So it's about time DeSantis answers some questions about what he's doing hanging out with a bunch of underage girls when he was their teenager, getting them when he was their teacher and when they were teenagers and he was getting them drunk.
Right. Well, here's the thing, though. I agree half of that. But the other half is Trump, when he owned the Miss Teen contest, would barge into teenage girls' dressing rooms and they'd scream and they'd say, as a man on the floor. And he said he's just checking to make sure they're safe. And he's a friend of Jeffrey Epstein. Both of them are no good. Both of them, Trump and DeSantis, are no darn good. We're going to the end of the show. Great show. Great call, as always. Matt Flynn, direct. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Signing off for today.